Of course, the places they're going to go for, correct me if I'm wrong on this, and also you, Ms. Dawn, is your accounts payable, your payroll department. They want to get accounts number and stuff into the payroll department. So all employees associated with that. Your sheriff's department, I can see, is a... Am I correct on that?
All your public records, anything with private information, so your even like employment applications, which has private information on it.
Yes.
Health insurance information, work claims information.
Yeah, those are departments that I just mentioned.
Yeah,
those are
all
the ones
of those things,
that
yeah, yeah.
You come to. We just got a hospital that we deal with. I just got letters where they were, because they go through another party.
Yeah.
And so they have our information. They have our Social Security numbers. They have a... Anyone that had been to the...
I got the same line.
You got it, too. I figured you did. Figured you did.
Yep.
So you have to decide. It's not... We can protect us here, but we deal with outside vendors.
Yes. Yeah. And that... So that letter there, that's some of the costs that are associated with when you have a breach. There's the hard costs of the actual losses that you would have. But then there's all the soft costs that go with it. So you have to send out all those letters. You have to provide what they're providing, credit protection, credit monitoring, and there's a cost to that. So I think the latest estimate of that cost is about $200 to $220 per person or per record that you have to send out. So if you can imagine how many records you guys have within the county, if there's a breach, anyone who is potentially touched by that breach has to get one of those letters and has to be offered credit monitoring and credit a fix for it if they do actually go in and damage their credit. So there's a potential for quite a bit of money just in notification. And that's part of the cyber liability backup policy is to have some breach notification coverage in there. Okay? And you have some of that. You just don't have a lot of it. $100,000 is not a huge amount anymore for that particular area.
When you mentioned along the way that part of this cost was due to unemployment or the employees changing constantly, we deal with that all the time, and the new employees not being trained, as so that's across the United States.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's driving costs for not only property damage and injury, but it's driving costs for claims of harassment and discrimination, that type of thing, where there's not proper training of department heads, for instance, and they come in and they do something inappropriate to an employee or say something that an employee deems inappropriate, and then there's a lawsuit. So there's a lot of training that just as a risk management suggestion, any training that you can do in that area. And Dawn and I talked about this with the Travelers actually has some risk management training that's available online. We have some available online too. Anything that you guys can do in that vein to protect yourself, the more the better. And not only from a loss standpoint, but also from a risk management standpoint with the insurance carriers, when we go to market the account for options, the more that you have in place, the better you look for, you know, to them, more attractive you are to them. So that makes your pricing more competitive, and because they look at that as, hey, you're doing your part to protect the county's losses. So that's a partnership more than, you know, to them, that's more of a partnership than just you're buying an insurance policy and putting it all over on the insurance policy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're talking about building costs, and which we've seen being kind of stable here the last.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be going, and from the federal government letter came talk. The gentleman that's in charge of the whole United States, supposedly, he says that it's flat. I heard him speak just the other day that you go to the grocery store and you. Inflation has stopped. Now you're telling me that it's still increasing?
Yeah. It's increasing at a decreasing rate. So instead of increasing 20%, it's now increasing 6%. So it's the rate of increase has decreased. But flat, I don't think we've seen flat yet in that particular area.
Sure.
That's just what we, you know, that's just what we see from dealing with contractors, dealing with losses that we see go through the process of the claims process. It's not as drastic as it was 12 months ago, but it's still higher than it was in 20 and 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have an idea how many states like Travelers is across?
Travelers is
vaguely
in all states and
okay,
and international.
This is what I was saying, is because the losses are coming, not necessarily from here, from Missouri. They're coming from all over the world.
They're calculating their loss ratio across their whole book of business. So you have wildfires in there. You have mm-hmm. hurricanes in there.
That's what I'm...
But you also have tornadoes in there. You also have hailstorms in there. So our part of the country is a little bit insulated from some of that stuff, but at the same time, they don't have tornadoes in California. They don't have hail in California, and we have all that here. So there's a, you know, it's spread across the entire book of business. If you look at their losses, I think that one of these things that I sent you had some data in there about losses. But their losses for the first quarter of 2023, and this is across the entire United States property and casualty carriers, kind of a combined, was $7.3 billion. And that was that in comparison to last year, $5.3 or something like that. So about a $2 billion increase just in the first quarter from 22 to 23 in losses. So, and that's again, that's across the whole United States. So, There's a lot, you know, in there.
To your point, Travelers is a national carrier, so they do see some of those, but we're also seeing those same increases with our super regional or regional carriers as well. So the ones that are paying these wind hail claims, they're not insulated as much as you would think, because they're not paying with hurricane and wildfire claims. Their rates are still increasing significantly. They also have to purchase reinsurance from several of the same carriers that like a Travelers would purchase those reinsurance from. And we're seeing those reinsurance rates increase significantly as well.
And that's Missouri, not just the United States. That's the state of Missouri.
Yes, so specifically regional carriers. So that would be like Missouri and some of the bordering states right around Missouri.
Around
so something that would be a little
Midwest.
More insulated, yes.
Mm-hmm. And probably the... I would say that the bulk of those are coming from wind and hail.
I think we just had a tornado in Indiana or somewhere in Tennessee.
And you'll see, you know, we saw that last year with Travelers increasing their wind hail deductions. So carriers are peeling out that part of it and saying, we see in this part of the country that this is where the losses are coming from, so we're going to increase the deductible on that part. So fire, vandalism, those type of things that would happen to a building, that's the same. That's kind of flat. That just, you know, those things happen. But the wind hail instances are significantly higher through a band that goes roughly from out of Texas and Oklahoma all the way up to Indiana, and it comes right through our part of the country. So the actuarials have done their studies, and they know if you're in that band that you're much more likely to have one of those losses. So they're trying to they're controlling costs and losses in that way and sharing some of those losses with their clients as well. So we did have a claims report in here for you, just to kind of give you an idea of where you stand, and with the exception of just a couple of automobile. These are the open ones?
Yeah, any highlighted ones are open.
Yeah, so there's an open one on auto here, and then it looks like everything else is closed on auto and property, and then there's one for a wrongful termination that's out there that's open too. So.
What was it? Oh, wrong termination.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that one's open from 2021, I think.
Okay.
So overall, as a percentage, your claims do not look bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a couple of vehicle
We do have a lot of deer, and they like to cross the road, and they're no competition for the car.
No, they're not. I hit one a week ago, and I have a truck, and that didn't help either.
I live a mile from here, and you have to watch them crossing every...
So from the standpoint of your losses, like I said, you're doing well. Nothing to be really concerned about there. We don't see any trends of things other than, like you said, deer. And that's nothing that you can plan for.
Yeah, I saw several, though. That's why I mentioned.
Yes. Really, that's kind of in a nutshell. That's, like I said, there's some things that I gave you just for reading if you want to look through them. They're just kind of areas that we might focus our risk management on, and that's these come from Travelers. Travelers is a good partner in giving us some of these things. But there's some things to watch out for.
Okay. And then recommendations for those training topics you had mentioned earlier?
I have, and I see Travelers has a website.
Okay.
And I have just gave this to Dawn, so see if I find it again. I had it here.
You can get them to Dawn.
Dawn
has a copy of that.
You do have those? Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
So there's two different websites. There's one that's training. It's called localgov.u. It's training from everything from drivers to law enforcement, employment, and then there's another one called Risk Management Plus, and it has some policies, procedures, that type of thing that you can use to just shore up your employment, like your employee handbook, things like that.
They do have a lot of information out there that they furnish us. We can.
There's one more topic that we wanted to go over, and that is sovereign immunity for the county. There's been some recent developments in what you need to do to protect the sovereign immunity for the county. The statute says there's three things in there that are outside the sovereign immunity limit. One is dangerous condition of your property, automobile liability, and then liabilities where you buy an insurance policy. In that statute, it says you have to have an express preservation of your sovereign immunity to continue to have that ability to have that limitation. What has, in the past, just having that statement in your policy has been adequate. What the courts have deemed now is because the insurance policy is a contract, and because you're a public entity, there are certain steps that you have to go through to make sure that contract is, it has to be approved in with the commission. It has to be noted in your minutes, and a person has to be designated to sign that document. And then that document has to be sent back to the insurance company to have on file. So those are the steps that we have to go through now. Before, in fact, still the insurance companies aren't really requiring it. But what we've seen from studying the sovereign immunity law and case law when it comes to contracts, it's something that we need to do to make sure that the county's sovereign immunity is protected.
Okay.
So I have the document, I have the steps that you need to do, and I will give those to you so you have those. So here's the document, and it just needs to be. Like I said, you have to make a motion, reference it in the minutes, and then that motion has to be an authorized signer, and it has to be dated, of course, and signed, and then we need a copy of this to send back to the insurance company, so they have it in their file, and then you need to retain a copy too.
Okay.
So there's that. And this is something you might want to discuss with your legal counsel, just to make sure that they understand what we're asking here.
This is through training that we've received from our legal counsel, so we don't want to infer anything that we are attorneys or know anything about that. But based off of our work with municipalities, we have consulted some specific attorneys that deal with sovereign immunity law, and they have recommended, based off what they are seeing within case law, that this is something that is very important in order to maintain that sovereign immunity preservation.